Welcome to the Property Couch, where each week you get to listen to two of Australia's leading property experts. Bryce Holdaway, co-host of Location, Location, Location Australia on Foxtel's Lifestyle Channel, and Ben Kingsley, Chair of Property Investment Professionals of Australia and the 2014 and 2015 Property Investment Advisor of the Year.
All right, folks, you're on the Property Couch, where each week Ben and I bring you the insider's guide to property investing. Hello, mate. Grand final week.
Grand final week. We're talking footy.
We're talking footy. Hey, someone wrote into Ivis and said that we haven't spoken about footy for a while. Well, that's a turn up for the books, isn't it? Most people are writing and saying, stop talking about footy.
Well, I reckon that's a Western Bulldogs supporter. Has to be. Because aren't they up and about? Haven't they come out of the woodwork? I mean, and all good too. Great results, you know. Go over to the West.
Mm.
Knock off the big boys over there, the Eagles.
Oh, I thought you meant Frio. No, they weren't the in the finals.
Boys. No. They're actually, the thing about putting them back in the waffle.
Mate, just, they won the Waffle Grand Final.
Well, they've got two teams in the Waffle Grand Final, so they've got to,
they won the Waffle Grand Final.
Let's be honest, they've got two feeder clubs.
He's up.
I mean,
hey, at the beginning of the year, one of the guys in the office here was Western Bulldogs, and that's how confident I was that Western Bulldogs were going to tank this year. I said, I'll bet you a sum of money that Fremantle finishes higher on the ladder than you do. So how's the irony now?
They're in the Grand Final. But if you go back and listen to a few podcasts, who did I tip? Who did I tip?
Sydney.
I did.
Yeah, but that... Yeah.
I think actually at the start of the season, I think they were mine.
Mate, but you're not...
And you know why?
Because it's not as if you're the Oracle.
What a lot of
Sydney.
People forget about... No, but what a lot of people forget about, they went out in straight sets last year.
Yeah.
And that is a burning gut thing.
They didn't have Buddy last year.
Yeah,
they got
but
Buddy
still,
this year.
Straight sets, burning gut. You know, you got to lose one to win one.
Well, we got a very strong Sydney listener base, Ben, so yeah. I'm sure we don't want to...
Go the Storm.
Very good point. Very good point. So obviously the Cronulla Sharks haven't won one.
Yeah, and we've got a fanatical shark supporter in our business too, don't we?
We do.
Yeah. Damien, he's heading up there and heading to the grand final, because you can always get a seat to that grand final. Oh, there's a little joke.
Not like the grand final. Hey, wouldn't it have been funny that we would have had this in nowhere else but Victoria? Can you get a public holiday for a parade?
Yeah, stupid.
And a horse race, right?
Yeah.
So tomorrow's parade, we get a public holiday. If it had been two Sydney teams, can you imagine how much of a fizzer that would have been?
Oh, well, yeah. No.
Rain and two Sydney teams.
It would have been great for the, you know, for hotels and F&B and tourism and all the, money coming down, and the airlines would have loved it. Mm. But anyway, we got one in there and they're a good side. So my head says Sydney, my heart says doggies.
Oh yeah, doggies.
Absolutely love the doggies to get up.
Yep. No, if I'm going to lose the bet, I might as well lose it for the Premier.
And I want the Storm to win, even though when I first moved to Sydney, I did live in Cronulla. Mm. I'm the Storm man. I'm a Melbourne boy.
So there you go, folks. With a big weekend for sport, good luck to whoever you're following.
Yes.
Ben, in a couple of weeks' time, we're going to be speaking at the Sydney Property Buyer Expo.
We are.
And so it's a really good opportunity for us to actually meet our listeners.
Yes, looking forward to it.
So we're throwing it out there that on the Saturday,
yes,
you and I are actually recording an episode of The Property Couch at the show.
Great.
That we'll pre-record and then play the following week. But we want to take live questions from the people that are in the audience. So it's a big shout out to all our listeners. We would love to meet you. And if you want to do that, go to our Facebook page, because we've got a coupon code where people can get some discounted tickets. I think they're free, aren't they, Elvis? Pretty sure. No, they're discounted. Yeah. Something. But they have to pay full price, Ben.
Yeah, discount. We honestly don't know. But
I think they're free.
We're just a highly, highly produced show.
Look at us. We're polished.
So I'll be there on the Friday, Saturday and the Sunday. Yeah. Are you going to be there for the Saturday?
Saturday and Sunday.
Beautiful.
So I'm actually doing a talk on the Sunday.
That's for people who can't make it on the Saturday.
Correct.
Some other commitments. So yeah, shout us out.
So on Saturday we're doing it with Dr. Andrew Wilson, who heads up the economics. He's the head economist for the Domain Group.
Yep.
He's got some very strong views around property. We're going to ask him about his views for the rest of 2016 and beyond.
Yeah.
2017, 2018. So that'll be really insightful. We're putting a shout out to our listeners as well. What questions do you want us to ask Dr. Andrew Wilson on your behalf? Because you will hear it. If you can't make it, you'll hear it the following week. So what are your burning questions about the property market leading into Christmas and, of course, for the next sort of 12 to 24 months? So if you go to our Facebook page, Ivis will have something up there. She'll ask the question. If you just put it in the comments and let us know what questions you are, we'll collate them and we'll ask Andrew when we see him up at the Home Buy Show, Ben.
Sounds like a plan.
And I'm also doing a webinar with Jane next Thursday. Jane Slacksmith, who's a good friend of the Property Couch, who's got renovation business that she loves, and we always ask her renovation questions. And we've got a question here from Alistair, which we've had for a little while. You're my favourite podcast. So far, I haven't heard much about renovation to add value. Can you talk about this, please? We will also have a registration on Facebook and all of our social media where they can register for that webinar where I'm joining Jane next week. So that might be helpful for anyone who's got any queries about renovation.
Beautiful. And, you know, we'll get to that. There's plenty of shows and more education that we want to pass on over time. So it's all good stuff. What are we talking about today?
Mate, we're going to talk about you as your role of Pippa. Recently, on behalf of the group, put out an annual investor sentiment survey.
We did.
It's very, very insightful.
It is.
For a couple of reasons. It's obviously you get into the mindset of the property investor, but for the niche of the property investor that you survey.
Yeah, it is. So effectively, all of our members, we go out to our members once a year and we ask them to give us, to go out to their clients and get a sense of what the market's thinking. So what the buyers, what these investors are thinking. And what's interesting about this survey is the responses that we get are predominantly from existing investors. Just to give you an idea, 91% of those surveyed, and we had 1,004 responses, 91% had one or more properties.
Mm.
Now, if you think about that, that's obviously a large number. And in fact, you know, 2 to 4 properties, 47%. 5 to 10 properties, 20%. 11 to 15 properties, 3%. 16 to 20 properties, almost 1%. And 21 properties or more, almost 1%.
So, you did the last one, did you? The 21 properties or more?
No, that's not me. I'm in that 5 to 10 bracket. So the reality is we're talking to sophisticated investors. Mm. So we thought today's show, what we're going to do is, here's that word, you ready for it? Unpack the survey in more detail and share some of the insights of what we would consider a more sophisticated group of investors to help out the beginners and to also, I suppose, solidify the views of those who are investing in the first instance. So that's what we'll do. So before we jump into some of the questions, let me give you a little bit more details on the profile of the people.
Come on.
So first of all, where are they from? So New South Wales had 47% of respondents. Victoria had 23%. Queensland had 14%. Western Australia had 7%. So a fair representation of the population. Which is really
cool. Did you allow for daylight savings for Western Australia? They obviously didn't get enough of a chance to...
But they got email over there. Just kidding. It's a little running
joke.
Come on,
mate. Come on. You've offended many, many people on this podcast, so now you're going for the Sandgropers. Shout out to all the Perth people.
Yeah, we love them. Oh, I'm married to one. So
I think they've got colour TV over there now, too.
Oh, there you go. As the Sandgroper, you're allowed to say that.
Correct.
All right, so... And they have this thing about Victorian, so, you know, any chance I get.
Well, I grew up with the mantra of kick a Vic.
And yeah. I've never
really thought about it until I moved here, but it was just kick a Vic.
It's not kick a quacker, it's kick a Vic.
Kick a Vic, right. Yeah.
Oh, so. All good, you know, and obviously, you know, look after your animals, don't do anything silly to animals. All right, what else do we know about these people? Their age group. Okay, so what was the major age group? 46 to 55 were 30%. 36 to 45 were 29%. Then we went to 25 to 35 is 18%. And then 56 to 65, 16%. And then the under 25 is just under 1.5%. And then the over 66 was basically 4%. Now, final thing to sort of unpack.
Set the scene.
Incomes, household incomes. So really diverse range here. Under 50,000. Just on 2%, 2 and a bit%, 50,000 to 75,000, about 5.5%, 75 to 100,000 household income, 12%, 100 to 150, 24%, 150 to 200, 20%, 200 to 250, 12%, 250 to 300, 5%, 300 plus, 6%, and not willing to disclose, 10%. Because they think people will be able to recognise who they are.
Yeah.
But we obviously can't because we don't ask for names. Yeah. So that sort of, I think it gives a broad mix. I think it's a really good broad mix in terms of what that looks like.
Yeah.
You know, so from that point of view, you know, that's what we're looking at in regards to that size. So I think that gives us a good idea of what these people look like. And, you know, yet to buy was only 9%. So we are dealing with people who are ready to rock and roll. And what do we learn about their current mindset? Well, the first question we asked, which was relating to property investment, was this one. Have you purchased an investment property in the last 12 months? 43% of respondents said yes, 56% no. Okay, so, but was this your first investment property? Only 20%, so 19.55% said yes, and 80% said no, hence that mix. So 80% of the people who were surveyed are basically telling us that they've already got one. So that's an interesting assessment.
So as Ben said at the top, it's just good for you to get a sense of where you are at and where your paradigms are, and then sort of benchmarking it against the people that have been around or done it a bit longer than you and how they're thinking. Ben, it's interesting that why invest in property? It's encouraging that well above half, so almost two-thirds, said for long-term capital growth. And some of the minorities were renovating for profit, short-term price growth, short-term cash flow, short-term tax benefits. But the second highest was rental income, which is good because it's, you know, ultimately what we're trying to do is get the growth first so that we can get the rental to fund a lifestyle. So people have got the headspace right at that sophisticated level.
And so another question on here we talk about is, if this was your first investment property, have you ever bought, you know, what did you purchase? So what did you buy? Is a really good one because, you know, you've got to remember, so this is, again, a shout out to the professional members of PIPA. They know what they're doing. And what's interesting about the respondents of the people, 77% said that they bought an existing or established property. Only 20% bought a brand new or off the plan. And just under 4% bought vacant land. So that also tells you that
that's a compelling story.
People who are in the know know what to buy.
Hey, I went to a breakfast this morning and talking about the future of Melbourne as a city. And there was a few things that sort of reinforced what we've been chatting about. You know, the fact that we're highly urbanised in our eastern seaboard. We're a form of density. We're exceptionally low on the world scale. In terms of price, we're quite low compared to the world scale. So there was nothing too out of the box there that we haven't sort of talked about on the podcast. But what was interesting is she said that if all of the apartments that are currently in planning came out of the ground, it'd be about 80,000. So it looked quite a lot. But then she flicked to the next slide. She goes, but what we think based on current trends and what's happening in the market and foreign investors getting money and settlement risk and all that sort of stuff, she reckons about 20 to 25,000 of them will actually get built. So there's about 25% of the properties in planning will only come out of the ground compared to what they've got planned. So that's probably reflective of the markets, reflective of sentiment, but it also, you know, it ties into the fact that the first time investor would be likely to buy something like that, but the sophisticated or maybe experienced investor is more likely to avoid it.
And I think if we had an exposure into the foreign market there, I suspect more people would be happy to buy that because foreigners are more adapt to buying, or they have to buy a brand new, I should say. So they're either going to buy a house and land or they're going to buy an apartment. So in reality, that's a really important message out there. I also saw the stats, and I can't recall exactly what it was, but it was something on the lines of 115,000 people moved to Victoria in the last 12 months. Like, you know,
1 in 4 were born elsewhere.
So obviously we've got a strong migration, and that says a lot about our multicultural and our tolerance to immigration. You know, Melbourne is very much a multicultural city, and we love the fact that we are. You know, such, you know, I look at London, I look at Melbourne, there's very similar cities. We have a lot of tolerance for all walks of life, and I think that's brilliant. That's what makes us such a great city to live in. In terms of, so in terms of that, that's 115,000 people that need shelter. So there is going to be an argument that some of the construction stuff that's happening is a good measure, and we obviously it's going to be absorbed, but we still have concerns around the high rise in terms of a bit of oversupply there.
Agreed. That gives me enormous confidence in this city too, because we've talked a few podcasts ago about the fact that the sun's not going to shine this bright forever in the property market. So there are some headwinds coming in Melbourne. But if you just think about sheer numbers of population of people that are going to be here, if you get the fundamentals right, you can ride that short-term noise, because the long game's pretty good. And then as you take the telescope view rather than the microscope view and put us on the landscape internationally, they did do a juxtaposition of London and Melbourne this morning, and the density is just, we're not even close. And the incomes required to afford the property in London compared to here is just enormous sort of disparity. So the confidence that I have in Australia as a location, the confidence I have in our major capital cities with their population growth coming, but people have to play the long game. because there will be some noise coming. And I think if you, these people who you've surveyed would get through that noise a lot easier than the freshies.
I agree. But there's still, so here, which is a great segue into the next question. Do you believe now is a good time to invest in residential property? Over 2/3 of people said yes, they do believe that. Now, that is confidence, but you do get artificially inflated confidence when a market's moving beautifully.
And interest rates are so incredibly
low. Yeah, exactly. So even, you know, so there will be a correction in the property market. You know, the size of the correction is what we don't know yet. But at some point, we always overshoot it. It's a natural phase in the cycle that property prices will exceed what is fair market value. And the test of where those property prices will end up is where owner-occupier demand lives. You know, that's what I've always said. So, you know, that's why when you have a mining boom and you don't have that owner-occupier appeal, the property prices are inflated by the yield chases. And then it'll finally find its value once, you know, the market corrects itself and you do that, you know, livability test and you do all of the sort of reasons why. So in markets like Melbourne and Sydney and Brisbane, they'll still overshoot themselves. I mean, you know, Sydney's looking at, you know, I think from a risk profile point of view, the fourth biggest risk city in the world for a property correction. And I don't disagree with that because I think the property prices that people are paying today aren't reflective of what I would consider fair value on those properties. They're market value, but are they fair value? So I suspect there will be a correction, but come back to your point. Well, this is a long-term investment. You know, go back to what you were saying before. Why do people invest in property? 2/3 of people invest in property for the long game. So if you're playing the long game, then that paper loss will sit there for a little while and you'll be able to get in. And then obviously when we do see that correction, that is also a buying opportunity in those markets. And this is about making sure that you play the right market at the right time. And we've been big on that, haven't we?
We have. And you think about, because what you say is it's a paper loss if there is any movement on the balance sheet, but it doesn't get crystallised. Because if you think about 2007, just before the GFC, mate, we were in similar conditions in Melbourne to what we are now.
Confidence.
And then in 2008, I was a property counsellor where everyone was ringing me up, and I had to learn some of the investment philosophies back in 2008 because it was probably the first time I'd been in cycles, but something of that extreme.
Yep.
And, you know, be fearful when others are greedy and all those things I didn't sort of think about up until that point.
Yep.
But now the people who bought in 2007 who saw some price movement backwards in 2008, now looking back saying, what was I worried about? So.
Yeah.
But if in the moment and in that 12-month period...
Well, we saw it in our business.
You've got to hold your nerve.
The confidence had waned. The sentiment had shifted. But you go back to some of my archive articles that I wrote in my very ordinary newsletter back in those days. You'd be amazed. I was screaming at people, oh, my God, this is the very best time. The times don't get any better than this to get into the market. And, you know...
You bought a family home in the GFC.
Yep, I did. I got into the market at that time. And, you know, so... It's really about understanding that if you're playing the long game and you don't get that fear that comes with the correction and also the noise that's created through the news of the day, because let's face it, the media don't like a balanced market. They like boom or bust because it sells. Just like they like a close contest in the American elections at the moment. They want that close contest because that's what makes people tune in, you know, to get their ad revenue up. At the end of the day, one is probably going to be hopefully a clear winner. Let's hope it is that way. But, you know, right up in a bit like the Olympics. Oh, it's bloody not ready. The joint's in trouble. We're going to have all this trouble.
Say that every time.
Yeah, they say that every time.
Except Sydney.
Then, yeah, Sydney was definitely a rare breed in that sense. But they had the negative thing to keep people interested. And then on the other side, oh, greatest events ever. Everything went well. You know, it wasn't too bad. Maybe the odd green pool. But a few other things, that, you know, like there's very little in that sort of commentary. And I think that's what they've got to do. They've got to continue to keep creating the news cycle. So if you can take out the noise. I mean, I haven't read a newspaper for business intel for a long time because of that reason. Because if I sit there and read a certain paper every day, I'm like, oh, it's boom, bust. Oh, yeah. It plays with my psychology, my investments mindset. So I choose not to listen to that and just focus on the long game, the fundamentals, that population growth, that scarcity, the practicality, all of those things, the owner-occupier appeal, the buyer's decision quadrant, all that stuff.
Mate, I find that I grew up in a house where the news was on at 6 o'clock, current affairs was on at 6:30 and you hit, and then the 7 o'clock. And that was just normal for me. So that sort of negativity cycle was something that that I grew up on. My wife and I have chosen to not have any of the news cycle in our household at all. And it's funny, like she went away for a couple of nights because of school holidays, as you know.
Yes.
And so I woke up in the morning, I found myself at a loose end, which is not usual when there's 3 and a 5 year old normally napping at my heels. So I ended up turning the news cycle stuff on in the morning just to, you know, have that company in the background. And I couldn't turn it off quick enough because I'm just thinking, what a miserable world we live in if I continue to listen to this. But when I'm generally happy listening to podcasts, creating my own destiny without having that noise coming in. So I think that's an important point that you make, that if people are making their property investment plans going forward based on the performance of a cycle in a 12 to 18 month period and then seeing doomsday and panic for any sidewards or even slightly backwards movement, they haven't set their strategy up correctly from the start.
Yeah, so don't get caught into the FOMO, the fear of missing out. Make sure you time your cycles, get your cash flow models working correctly, use the Money Smarts setup that we've given you, and play the long game, and you'll be well off. In fact, looking at purchasing the next 12 months, 6 to 12 months, we had almost 60% of people saying they are looking to buy in the next 6 to 12 months. Only 25% are basically saying no, and there was 17% unsure.
Mm.
So that also then tells us, one, there's sentiment confidence, and two, people are going to take action on that confidence that they've got as well.
And I'm seeing on the ground just people have got enormous confidence in their ability to repay debt because they've got low interest rates and their cost of funds are so low. So that's that would be contributing to that as well. If so, what question 7, if so, what type of property would you buy? Clearly, house is the winner. Our good mate Peter Koulizos, the triple L, land, location, and looks.
Yep.
He doesn't say land for thirst for no reason.
Yep.
So a house gives you that. It's not for everyone, and we always say that if you focus on the suburb first and then choose the property second, but all things being equal, they'd choose a house.
Yeah, and you know, it was interesting. We went out for dinner last night with a couple, and they were doing a development, and the development that they did was basically building a duplex in a really great location. And we're going to see more of that because, you know, in the sort of high-end areas, they're saying that they want to downsize into something that's a lot more easy to maintain rather than their bigger house. They do not want to leave their area. So, you know, we've always said that there are multiple strategies you can use, but this downsizing to stay in the same area and get some cash out to be able to do that of their $2.5 million property, buy this, you know, $1.6 million, gives them a bit of a spare cash, and it's more practical and livable for their needs as they're getting a little bit older. And there's going to be more of that.
And they're staying in the better land value areas, which is only having a, you know, an upwards impact on price, which means that the location still becomes really important.
That's right. What did the agent say to him? He said, your buyer is going to come from within 500 meters. 500 meters. Mm. Of where you're building these townhouses.
Yeah.
Now that says the confidence of the agent knows his market to sort of say there are people looking for that because there's a shortage of that type of stock. And so I think there is some real opportunity in that particular market because they will pay whatever. They're a naive buyer in a sense. And they're sort of thinking, well, I'm getting $2.5 million for my current home. It's all cash. Mm. It's unencumbered. So $1.6, $1.7, that doesn't really matter to me.
Yeah.
You know, so you can pick up a potentially good result.
And there's no stock around, so they're prepared to renovate what they've got and they don't lose all the money getting out of the transaction and they don't have to change their networks and where they are, so it's all very good. Hey, what's interesting, Ben, is one of the summary findings was investors are continuing to ignore the noise about possible changes to negative gearing and other problems. So 72% of sophisticated investors that you've surveyed are not worried about the political proposals advocating the removal of negative gearing. It's interesting.
Yeah, so I mean, once this report came out, I actually did an interview on Sky Business, which we'll try and get on our website if we can. And part of that, thanks Ivers, part of that is there was a really interesting point. They are not worried about that. So whereas the Labor and the Greens are fighting this argument around affordability and saying that, you know, if we take negative gearing away from existing properties, that will improve affordability. These investors are telling us they want to buy existing property and if they want to buy it closer into town. So if you're ever thinking that, you know, with a change of negative gearing, you're going to get cheaper properties closer into the major capital cities, you are kidding yourselves. Mm. And I've said this before in a very long, detailed
episode 51.
Episode 51. I can't believe you know it straight off the top of your head.
You pressed eyes?
Around that. Now, let's hope it's right. She's just going to check.
It's right.
So the reality is that that land is going to be even more valuable, because ultimately even the old existing property on it is now going to have further intrinsic value, because developers are going to sniff that out to, you know, knock the house down and build two.
Is that an exclusive that you're offering to our listeners right here, that location no longer does 80% of the heavy lifting? It's now 86 or 87%
yeah,
of the heavy
lifting?
Yeah,
it's going to be even more. It's going to go up to a higher number. So
hey, an extension of that, 47% of property investors are positively geared, and some of the remaining feel they'll go positively geared in the next 5 years. So that's an extension of something that you were very passionate about at the time, that it's not this forever position where it's a burden on the government. It's a short-term thing for people to be self-funded, and they move into a tax-paying position soon, within 5 years, or currently almost half of them are.
Yeah, it's only a moment in time. It's only a moment in time. So to be negatively geared is only a moment in time. Lower interest rates have obviously moved more people there, but what we're also knowing from this sophisticated group here, and you heard me earlier say how many properties some of these own, ultimately they've gone through their accumulation phase and they've built up a big enough asset base that they're now retiring the debt out. So that's a good sign that you're going to see, you know, all of these people who are taking an income from their property portfolio and paying their way. You know, they're effectively, all of that negative gearing done was give them a cash flow advantage early up front, but they're going to be paying their taxes down the track. So did you hear that, Labor and Greens? They're going to pay their tax. They're going to pay their way. So really important to understand.
Where's the most appealing place to buy right now? 65% of respondents said metropolitan markets.
Yeah, so that's a good confidence score. It's about,
as opposed to regional and coastal.
Yep, so regional and coastal are going to... Coastal is going to give you a bit of lifestyle, but there may be in some cases there's a bit of, you know, two birds with one stone idea they can have that sort of holiday home. Maybe a bit of, Airbnb type stuff going on there.
But what's interesting, Ben, is the sophisticated investors running like the plague from mining towns. 0.2% of respondents. So we've got first-time listeners who may be seduced by, you know, probably now, but mining town activity. So
your pure mining towns are dead in the water. But your lifestyle towns with mining and potential, you know, so the Brooms of this world, and, you know, full disclosure, I am running the ruler over Broome at the moment, but I'm in a different situation. It's more of an opportunity as opposed to, so don't go out there and buy in Broome, everyone. It's not advice.
See Ben in Broome, put him on Instagram, hashtag I'm here too.
So that's just an example. I'm not saying I've bought there. It's definitely an opportunistic chance, and it's a bit of a speculative play, and I can do that. With a, you know, $4.5+ million property portfolio, I can do that. So, you know, from that point of view, you know, there is, I'm not seeing that as a mining town. I'm seeing that as a lifestyle town, but I'm also seeing that as a gateway to the north. And I'm seeing what's going to be happening up in Lake Argyle and the Ord River scheme, and basically, you know, that protein story of the north to feed Asia. You know, it's the Asia food bowl. There's an opportunity there. And, you know, there's no doubt we've also looked at far north Queensland as a potential opportunity for a more sophisticated investor as well.
Very good. Hey, which state capital do you believe currently offers the best investment prospects? Mate, pretty significantly Brisbane, which is good news for a lot of our clients, because we've put a few of them into Brisbane's property market.
And it's 2 years in a row that they've been on that bandwagon. And it very much is twofold. It's an affordability story and it's a yield story. So affordability in terms of, for my bang for buck, what I can buy in Brisbane versus what I can buy in Melbourne and Sydney. So I'm interested in what I can get into the market, and yields are still holding at that sort of 4+ range, 4.5. So from that point of view, that's what I talk about. So some investors need to chase yield. So that's where the best yields are at the moment. That could be absorbed. And I think it's also a product of a pretty sluggish economy. So, you know, it's opportunistic. So I think it is a bit countercyclical, but the people are getting in there thinking that, you know, this market is going to turn at some point. And if we look at the trends for the last cycles, the 2001 to 2003 cycle, The 2010-11 cycle, Brisbane's always late to the party.
Mm.
So that one's a good news story for them.
One thing to keep in mind with Brizzy is it's a renter's paradise up there. So you've just got to be very careful to good make point. Sure. I like to stay in the blue chip stuff at the minute because one of our team here had a property that she was getting 480 in a really great suburb, and they've had to drop it down to 450 just because the tenants hold the power. But long term, no problem with Brizzy.
All right, so what have we got next in terms of using the lowest score, which one we've established to best describe your situation? So, you know, this is just basically profiling the investor. My investment portfolio of properties generates a passive income. 26% say yes. I can easily afford to cover any cash flow shortfalls at the moment. 26% saying yes. I can comfortably cover the cash flow. So this is us getting a sense of their cash flow situation. I can cover the current cash flows, but my cash flows are tight. So interestingly there, 18% of people are saying that their cash flow is a little tight. So again, but you know, don't be too aggressive as an investor. Make sure you've got a buffer. Make sure you can cover this because property, the cost of getting in and out of property is expensive. So if you've got to hold this thing for 2 or 3 years, you're more than likely going to come out in the red once you factor in the interest that you've paid along the journey and all the costs, stamp duty and so forth, getting in, getting out. So please don't be investing in property if cash flows are super tight, unless you can look at ways in which you can use your equity and build up that buffer, because you might be on one more that you don't get yourself into too much trouble.
Very true, Ben. How do you intend to secure finance for your next investment loan? 71% said through a mortgage broker. So as long as it's an investment savvy mortgage broker, I think that's a very smart move. But it's interesting that sophisticated investors will outsource that and to get someone, you know, if they're time poor, they get someone else to do it for them.
Yeah. Now, we also wanted to gauge their concerns, what's happening in the marketplace as well. So in the marketplace, we're talking about what were those concerns. The number one concern for everyone, which I think is a valid one, is a big correction in property prices. So, yep, you know, nothing worse than basically having a negative equity position. So that's the number one. Number two was ranked as further tightening to investment lending. So people who have a strategy that they want to roll out, but the lending is not allowing them to do that. Number three came in, interesting, changes to negative gearing, tax law. So even though on the previous one, people weren't too concerned about it, when it came down to obviously they needed to rank these in order. So they weren't too worried about an oversupply. That came in at 10% in the first instance. And, you know, long periods of vacancies. So I think that's an important one.
How's the lowest ranked one? Being ripped off by a spruiker. So sophisticated investors don't fear the tricks of a spruiker.
Whereas I think if we went out to the basic public and the conservative, that one would be really high up there. So that's a really important one as well.
Agreed.
So how are we going for time?
We're running out. Let's quickly find a few headlines here that might help our listeners.
Well, here, the bubble question. How many of you are concerned about a bubble? 72% are saying no, they're not concerned. 10% are saying they're unsure, and 20% are basically saying that, I'm a little concerned. And I think that, you know, that sort of a little concern is probably well held for me.
Yeah. What about this question? Do you believe the property investment industry should be regulated and licensed the same way financial planners, mortgage brokers and real estate agents are? 89% said...
Unanimous.
Yes. Absolutely.
No, it wasn't unanimous, but it's big.
7% were unsure.
7% unsure. Because, again, that's a knowledge-building thing.
Yeah.
And we obviously...
But it outranked no.
We had remember, we asked people on the podcast to fill the survey out. So it wasn't just people who are existing clients. We actually had other people who were doing that as well. This is an interesting one for me. Who do you get your professional advice from? You know, so which professional have you sought advice from in the past? Mortgage broker, basically 76%. Accountant, 74%. Lawyer, 64%. Property investment advisor, 45%. And also a property manager was 58%. What this says to me is we've got work to do, because you should be getting your property investment advice from a property investment advisor, not from the mortgage broker. The mortgage broker should give you the cash management and lending advice. The accountant should give you the tax advice. The financial planner should give you the defense piece of the conversation. But the asset selection should come down to the property investment advisor working effectively in conjunction with the buyer's agent as well. So that's an important one. We need to do more work there to continue to keep educating the right people to talk to get your property investment advice.
Very well said. What type of property would you buy? 59% said a house. Interestingly, 9% said a townhouse or a villa, and 10% said a unit or apartment. I'd suggest to people that you'd probably go house, townhouse, then apartment, rather than the other way around.
I agree. I agree with that. I think there's and in the future, where are people going to seek their advice? So we've actually got a property investment advisor. So people are learning. You know, 54% ranked that number one. The accountant number two. So the accountants have got trust. But if so, just be mindful that they've got a good image out there, that they're trustful, and that's really great. But if they're trying to sell you something off a stock list, or if they're making a referral, just ask them, are they getting any financial benefit or gain out of that referral? If they're transparent in that, then you'll know whether there is an agenda there or whether they think they're working in your best interest.
So declare their fees. You can make up your own mind. That's the key. It's got to be that declaration. Well, there you have it, folks. We've ripped through that. Ben, are we able to get that out to the listeners?
Yeah, I think there's some raw data that we can also do. We'll do a link to the Pippa website, so I won't be stealing Pippa's basically intellectual property, which is pretty cool. I just want to finish on one last thing. Where did you get your investment knowledge or education from? The first rank was professional sources, which is a great sign. Data research was, so that was 44%. Mm-hmm. Data research was 15%. Property investment magazines was around 10%. Internet searches was around 11%. So that ranked in third. So it went professionals, research data providers, internet searches. Number four were books. So check out our book, The Armchair Guide to Property Investing, number one bestseller in the business section. Hopefully there's some great knowledge in there. And number five was?
Podcasts. Number six was TV shows. Did you see that?
Number six was TV programs. But you've got, you've got the Kunal.
Mate. they should check out more TV shows.
You've got professional, you've got the quaddy. Very good. So that's a good news story.
That is a very good news story. Ben, I'd like to think that podcasts would be sort of up in that top three next year.
Oh, we'll see what we can do.
See if we can help with that. But there you go, folks. There's some insights. As Ben said, we'll make that available to you, the link on the Facebook page. If you go to thepropertycouch.com.au, we'll also have it there so that you can find a way to download that and have a bit of a look yourself. So don't forget, folks, that Ben and I will be at the Sydney Property Buyer Show in a few weekends' time. I think it's the 23rd of
Correct.
October.
That's the one.
So come and listen on the Saturday. We'd love to meet you.
Absolutely.
And there'll be a code on our Facebook page for you to get heavily, I think, 100% discounted tickets, but maybe we'll check that. I'm also doing the webinar with Jane next Thursday, Jane Slack-Smith, who's a friend of the couch. So we'll have a registration if you want to watch that webinar. And, of course, go for your favourite team this weekend. So good luck to the Cronulla Sharks and the Melbourne Storm and also the Sydney Swans and the Western Bulldogs, whoever your Poseidon is. So, mate.
I've got to do the sign-off, don't I?
Come on, mate. You're going to retire at the end of the year. You've got to stay fit.
Stay focused. Romanian.
Okay.
No idea. Here we go. La Revedere. So maybe that's La Revedere. Yeah. La Revedere.
Yeah.
So that's French?
Happy with the French overtone on
that? Well, there's not even another option for me on my little piece of paper.
Maybe at the end of the year we'll get a phonetically spelled out one for him so we don't get French and everything. But there you go, mate. For Romanians, we'll be impressed by that. I reckon all of our Romanian listeners will probably write in and let you know how we went.
I was wrong.
Donut. So there you go, folks. So again, if you want to have a look at that survey yourself, go to the Facebook page, our Instagram, all that sort of stuff, and we'll have a link there. Otherwise, we will see you next week. Ben, have we got anything planned for next week, or we just do what we normally do and just turn up and hopefully we've got something?
Yeah, well, you know, we're highly polished. We're a professional outfit. Oh, and if you'd love to give us a review, I think we're up to 180 five-star reviews. Love to get it to 200 by...
So what's your shout-out? Someone's on the train right now listening to this.
Just jump on.
Make a jump over.
We might even show you how to do reviews. Some people get a bit mixed up because sometimes you can't find where to put the reviews, but if you go and look for the list on the charts and then there's a review, basically give us a little review there.
And the reason for that little bit of narcissism, folks, is because it helps us stay relevant and more people can find us and hopefully make better decisions around property. So
exactly.
There we go, folks. Until next week.
I'll tune out, mate. My job's done.
Until next week. We'll see you later. All right, folks. Cheers.